Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar, broadcasting from my home studio. Coming up later in the program, Pennsylvania counties talk about election reforms and other priorities. But up front, the New York Times reported this weekend that Republican Congressman Scott Perry, who represents Dauphin and portions of Cumberland and York counties, collaborated with former President Donald Trump in a scheme to overturn legally certified election results in Georgia. The Times reported Perry connected Trump with Philadelphia lawyer Jeffrey Clark, who was an acting assistant attorney general in the U.S. Department of Justice and who was sympathetic to Trump's efforts to push a false claim of election fraud to stay in power. It said that Trump considered firing acting attorney general Jeffrey Rosen, who was not willing to pursue Trump's claims in the swing state. The Times wrote, as the date for Congress to affirm Mr. Biden's victory neared, Mr. Perry and Mr. Clark designed, or I should say discussed, a plan to have the Justice Department send a letter to Georgia state lawmakers informing them of an investigation into voter fraud that could invalidate the state's electoral college results. Trump didn't carry out the plan. Now, Perry, who voted January 6th against certifying Pennsylvania's election results, is under fire. WITF's Capitol reporter Sam Dunklaw has been following this story all weekend, and he joins us now. Sam, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Scott. Thanks for having me.
If you'd like to weigh in, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we're at SmartTalkWITF. Sam, I'll start off by asking you, bring us up to date with what's been reported and what we know about this story.
Yeah, so Scott, you touched on pretty much all the major points there right at the top of the hour. What we know is that Congressman Perry had introduced President Trump to this junior level Justice Department lawyer, Jeffrey Clark, because more senior level administration officials in the Justice Department were not willing to engage President Trump on these baseless conspiracy theories about election fraud. In particularly in the state of Georgia. Georgia was, of course, as we all remember, of particular notice because of the ongoing Senate elections and because of how close the election was there. Joe Biden won that state by 12,000 votes. So with Perry making the introduction to Jeffrey Clark, the two of them began discussing this plan where they would send a letter to Georgia's State House saying there's DOJ investigations going on into voter fraud in your state. And if you move forward with the Electoral College certification, that vote may very well be invalidated by those investigations. But the problem was that the Department of Justice had been had launched dozens of investigations from early November all the way through up until that time when Perry and Clark were talking about sending that letter. And none of those investigations had turned up any results of voter fraud. So right away when this story broke Saturday night, State Representative Malcolm Kenyatta, who represents the Philadelphia area, had immediately called for Congressman Perry to resign. Since that time, Democratic organizations, including the York County Party, Cumberland County, the State Democratic Party have all called for Perry's resignation as well.
Has Congressman Perry responded to the story from over the weekend?
We've put out multiple requests for comment, as did the Times that they noted in their story. So far, he has not responded to anything. We've also reached out to the state GOP. We've reached out to some state House lawmakers as well as some of the leaders in the House to respond to Representative Kenyatta's call for resignation. They have not responded, as well as Pennsylvania's other GOP congressmen. They've all been pretty much radio silent at this point, Scott.
And I will add that I also sent an email to Congressman Perry's office inviting him to appear on today's program and got no response from the office. Sam, not only, some of the members of Congress, the State House, the Democratic organizations have asked for the congressman's resignation. There have been also reactions from Governor Wolf and even Attorney General Josh Shapiro on this. What have they been saying?
So Governor Wolf and Congressman Matt Cartwright, I'll add as well, are calling for more of an investigation. They want to know more about the facts of what may have transpired, not necessarily to give Congressman Perry the benefit of the doubt, but to just explore a little bit more about what exactly happened here. Because to be fair, Scott, the New York Times story does cite unnamed sources from where this information came from. The Times reporting, of course, has been very upfront and very much verified in terms of the things that they put out there. You know, documents usually later show later on that what they report is accurate. But Wolf and a few others are calling for an investigation. The Government Accountability Office in Washington might be one to carry that out. And State Attorney General Josh Shapiro, though, is looking at this in terms of what the Constitution might say about what Perry did. He tweeted out something saying that Perry should be familiar with the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, Section 3, which says that nobody who has taken an oath of office as an elected official may engage in insurrection or rebellion against the United States. And Shapiro appears to be qualifying the actions that Perry took with Jeffrey Clark as potential rebellion against the United States.
Are there any people out there who are saying what Congressman Perry did was illegal?
Nobody has qualified that yet, that what he did was illegal. But the calls for resignation are pretty much all unilaterally saying that what transpired was improper and unbecoming of an elected official. That's what we know so far.
Let's take a phone call from Lisa in Phoenixville. Lisa, you're on the air with us.
Good morning, and thank you for that segue. That's perfect, because my question is actually, why is Scott Perry and also Doug Mastriano and Russ Diamond, who are two other people pushing this big lie, the disinformation, while they're being investigated, why do they still get a taxpayer-funded paycheck? When you're investigating misconduct and conduct unbecoming, these people should get suspended without pay. And this type of anti-American attempt to overturn an election and overthrow our government cannot be permitted. I don't care what party you're in. It's really ridiculous. And so I want to know, how do we get these guys suspended without pay for conduct unbecoming while these investigations are happening? Thank you.
Lisa, thank you very much for your call. Sam, I don't know whether you can answer that question or not, but has there been any talk about that? Is there anything in code that says a lawmaker can be suspended while an investigation is occurring?
I'll admit, Scott, I'm unclear on that. I have personally never heard of that or reported on it. But I do know that as I mentioned before, the Government Accountability Office is just one arm that can investigate lawmakers and put them under the microscope. The Senate Judiciary Committee, I'll add as well, is another that has expressed interest in looking into this. Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois chairs that committee and had told Times reporters over the weekend that they would be looking into that. I should also note, too, that Governor Wolf seems to have a problem as well with what our caller brought up in saying that Representative Perry used a taxpayer-funded paycheck to, in his words, overturn or at least attempt to overturn a fair and free election. This action compounding that.
Hmm. Sam Ducklaw, WITF's Capital Bureau Chief. Hey, Sam, thank you very much for the update.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
We reached out to a number of people, experts in the legal field, especially related to elections over the weekend. Heard back from Edward B. Foley. He's the Ebersold Chair in Constitutional Law and Director of Election Law at Ohio State University. He's a contributing columnist to the Washington Post. Also has written a widely acclaimed book about elections and contested elections in particular. He was not able to appear on today's program, but he did tell me, and this is a direct quote, "It adds another dimension to the pattern of egregiously inappropriate conduct on the part of President Trump in his concerted and sustained effort to overturn the result of the election. His phone call to Georgia's Secretary of State Raffensperger may be the single most culpable act in his pattern of misconduct, but the overall effort on his part now includes this component as well," meaning this story with that involves Congressman Perry, or allegedly involves Congressman Perry. With us now is Assistant Professor of Public Policy and Administration in the School of Public Affairs at Penn State Harrisburg, Dr. Daniel Mallinson, to discuss this in more detail. Dr. Mallinson, welcome to the program.
Great. Thanks for having me, Scott.
And again, if you have a question or comment, like to weigh in, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalk@witf. So, Dr. Mallinson, first of all, your thoughts on what the New York Times reported this weekend?
Sure. So, I mean, both shocking this weekend to see our local representative and his role in this, but also I think going to Ned's point earlier, Ned Foley's point, also not shocking in that we know that there was from the White House a concerted effort of Trump and former President Trump and his allies to try to overturn the election, and you know, this is really another layer in that story, of which I'm sure there are other layers that we aren't yet aware of. But this is a new one, and it certainly brings it close to home with the involvement of Congressman Perry.
Representative Perry was one of more than 100 members of Congress who objected to Pennsylvania and Arizona's electoral votes. He also signed on to a lawsuit from Texas challenging Pennsylvania's results. Obviously, he's a big Trump supporter, but I know you're not a legal scholar, but do you see anything illegal in what he did?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but I know that one of the things that came out from the New York Times story is there's uncertainty over how this connection was made, and also how the president was speaking to Mr. Clark, the member of the Department of Justice. The White House and the president typically, is required to contact the Attorney General before to resolve any issues that he has with the Department of Justice, or to raise questions about investigations and things like that. And the White House is supposed to be then authorized to speak to lower level members of the department. And this was seems to be an end run around the acting Attorney General. And there's questions then about the legality of that. And then, of course, we now have a member of Congress that's involved in facilitating that. So I think there will probably be questions about not only the impropriety, but the legality. Of course, Mr. Clark has, according to the story, has said that the contacts were legal. But I think that's going to be one aspect of the legality here that has to be explored. I mean, also, again, Ned brings up the call with the Georgia Secretary of State. There were arguments that at the time that was illegal, and this would, you know, fits into that pressuring of a state to overturn its election results. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's probably legal questions there, but I can't speak to them specifically, but.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, something else that that has been mentioned this weekend is an attempt to overthrow or to throw out legally cast votes in a state that would be illegal, too. I really don't want you to speculate, but is that something that could come into this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of along the lines of my thinking with the Georgia example, with the other Georgia example with the Secretary of State. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, Sam earlier mentioned the our Attorney General's comments about the 14th Amendment and sedition, and we've seen a lot of discussion about those terms but sorting out if that's legally what's occurred. You know, both the insurrection as well as with these other behind the scene machinations. I mean, that's going to be a legal question that has to be worked out.
Congressman Perry, when asked to resign, or really demanding resignation from a number of people after he objected to Pennsylvania's electoral votes, had a one-word response. It was no. That was his response to those calls for resignation. now we have a lot of Democratic organizations and a number of people in office were asking for the Congressman Perry to resign as well. There really is no reason to believe that he would respond by resigning. So to remove Congressman Perry from office, the only recourse, if he doesn't choose to resign, I would imagine, is the next election, which is in November of 2022. How do you see that election?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's a political way to hold Congressman Perry accountable if his constituents are unhappy with his involvement in this or his broader position on the election. I guess I would say that I'm skeptical that this will remain an issue in the voters' minds in 2 years. 2 years doesn't seem like a long time, but it's a long time in politics. Much can happen between now and then. We're also going to have a gubernatorial race in Pennsylvania that's going to be driving a lot of the discussion in 2 years. The extent to which the circumstances surrounding this election linger as an electoral issue for these members, I think is certainly an open question in my mind. But also in the district, this is a district that this past election was on many national lists as one of the most, Perry was one of the most threatened members of Congress. It was a district that received a lot of attention as a possible flip for the Democrats. And, Perry was one of the Republicans that ended up outperforming the president, one of many. And, he outperformed he got a higher margin than he did in 2018. The other component that'll come in 2 years is the redistricting effort. And if Pennsylvania indeed loses a seat in the House, it's likely that this district will have to expand out into more rural areas to bring in the 500 or so thousand additional people that will be required for the district. And that, to me, that only that suggests that could raise sort of the padding of his margin in the district. So, it's certainly a district that's going to receive probably the same attention from Democrats it did the last two cycles, but he's been able to survive. He will still be the incumbent, and he may have a slightly better advantage depending on how the redistricting goes. And I can't imagine this being a primary issue from another Republican. There's still a lot of support for President Trump in the rural parts of the district. Perry has consistently been supportive of the president. One of the things that came out in another interview that I did on him is Scott Perry is who he is, and people know who he is, and he is hung on in the district. So, I question whether this will be a major issue in 2 years.
Dr. Daniel Mallinson is an assistant professor of public policy and administration in the School of Public Affairs at Penn State Harrisburg. Dr. Mallinson, thank you very much for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Just want to go over a few of the emails that we have received. A number of people calling who wanted to know, or should say, were talking about Congressman Perry resigning. Tim says, Perry's blatant conspiratorial actions are a stain on the reputation of Congress and the people of Pennsylvania District 10. He should be removed from office if he is unwilling to do the honorable thing and resign immediately. Let's see, what else do we have here? We have another call. I urge Congressman Perry to resign rather than wasting precious congressional time and resources with the 14th Amendment Section 3 proceedings. His behavior demonstrates his arrogance and disregard for the Constitution, which he has sworn numerous times to uphold and defend. That comes from Carl. There have been a number of calls for Congressman Perry to resign, including from the Cumberland County Democratic Party. The committee's Nicholas Sohn joins us. Mr. Sohn, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing well. So, question. The basic question is, why do you think Scott Perry should resign from Congress?
You know, we believe that Scott Perry has, as many of your callers have noted, has violated the oath that he swore to uphold. More specifically, if you take a look at the 14th Amendment, Section 3, prohibits anyone who has engaged in insurrection against the United States from holding office at any level. If you take that into account, Mr. Perry, who, you know, was engaged in telling a lie, which then led to the insurrection, you know, Mr. Perry should no longer be serving in Congress, according to the 14th Amendment, Section 3 of the United States Constitution.
As I said, the Cumberland County Democratic Committee called for Congressman Perry's resignation, but you went a step further, meaning the committee went a step further in the things mm-hmm. that you're demanding of the Congressman. What are you looking for?
So, you know, I mean, one of the things that we noted inside of our press release is the fact that the Pennsylvania National Guard should recall Congressman Perry and issue a general court-martial, stripping him of his title and of his benefits that he earned. And this would also, entail him being dishonorably discharged from military service. And the provision which would allow for this to occur is under the United States Military General Code, which former U.S. Army Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson has gone on the record as saying that he believes retired General Michael Flynn should be called back from active duty. And Wilkerson has, you know, gone farther to say that anyone who was involved inside of the coup should also be held accountable. This would mean Congressman Perry should also be held to the same standard that a retired military general should be held to.
Do you think what the congressman is alleged to have done in this report is illegal?
I do.
In what way?
Just to kind of go off of, you know, this, I mean, it used to be unacceptable for people to engage in telling lies. But somehow under Mr. Trump and his leadership, it became okay to tell a lie. And lies have consequences. And so this big lie that was told of, you know, the election being stolen and, you know, what Mr. Perry was seeking to do was invalidating the election results of the entire state of Pennsylvania. This doesn't just affect the people of the 10th congressional district. It affects every single Pennsylvanian. And that's why, you know, we believe that, you know, he should be court-martialed.
Congressman Perry, as I said just a few minutes ago, when there were calls for his resignation after the Electoral College vote, his answer was no. Why do you think that he'd listen this time and decide to resign?
I think that, you know, it's always important to keep the pressure on members of Congress, whether, you know, regardless of political party. So I think that if, you know, we continue to pressure Congressman Perry, and I think that if it eventually gets to a point where, you know, there's a serious ethics investigation into him, I think that we could see the congressman's hand being forced.
You know, you just talked about regardless of party, but let's face it. You're the Democratic Party of Cumberland County. The Democratic committees in both York County and Dauphin County, as well as the state committee, have called for the congressman's resignation. There are going to be those who see this as nothing more than more political theater, that this is a Republican congressman and Democrats are calling for his resignation. How would you respond to that?
I would respond to that by going back to what I stated just a few moments ago, that it comes down to the truth. If you engage in telling lies, you should be held accountable. Mr. Perry told the big lie, which was that, you know, the election was somehow stolen. If this election was stolen, then why wasn't Eugene DePasquale sworn in? Mr. Perry, Congressman Perry, why wasn't Eugene sworn in if the election was stolen?
Eugene DePasquale was Congressman Perry's result in I should say Congressman Perry's opponent in last November's election. Nicholas Soans of the Cumberland County Democratic Committee, thank you very much for being with us today.
Not a problem. Thank you.
Stay tuned to WITF. We will continue to follow this story throughout the day, and I'm sure it will go beyond today as well. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Pennsylvania's 67 counties probably got more attention before and after last November's election than at any time in the recent past. That's because counties prepare for and run the state's elections, and the 2020 election was marked by many changes and controversies. On Smart Talk, the County Commissioners Association of Pennsylvania is here today to list their priorities for 2021, including making elections run more smoothly. Joining us is Lisa Schaefer. She's the executive director of the County Commissioners Association of Pennsylvania, and Kevin Boozle, he's the CCAP president and the Butler County Commissioner. Lisa Schaefer and Commissioner Boozle, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Welcome.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Lisa Schaefer, here we are. The segment we just completed had a lot to do with the 2020 election. We still are talking about it. There was a lot that went on. There was a lot of controversy, a lot of accusations that went around. You know, one of the things I've thought about often, and maybe Commissioner Boozle, you can weigh in on this as well, is that with President Trump and these members of Congress, others that have said there was a lot of fraud in Pennsylvania, across the country, that it, to me it seems as a disrespect for those county workers who were working on the election. Commissioner, let me ask you, do you see it that way?
I actually do. I think that there's... Look, this is one of the priorities of every county commissioner in our state, is to make sure that we have a fair, secure election. And so while we are the administrator, we don't set the rules. We obviously have a lot of rules to follow, and they did change recently. But the election workers, the temporary staff that were hired, the election directors really put in a lot of hours and made sure that this election went off without too many hiccups. And so, you know, I think that they should be proud of the job that they did from beginning to end throughout this entire process. Absolutely. They should be very proud, and we should be proud of them.
There have been some just here in recent weeks who have said that this was the most smoothly run, best operated election in the nation's history. Would you say that that is the case in Pennsylvania?
I think it's the... there was a lot of tough areas in this election. There really were. I think the biggest thing I was concerned about would have been the timing and mail of getting them back. That was very stressful for people. But overall, look, we had a 20% uptick in our county of registered voters. We had more people vote in this election than ever before in history. I think that knowing that all of those things happened and it still went off very well, it was very secure. We have auditable trails. We have paper ballots as opposed to just electronic. A lot of changes came along, and I can tell you, I think this is probably the most secure election that we've ever engaged in, that I've ever engaged in.
Lisa Schaefer, as executive director of the County Commissioners Association of Pennsylvania, I'm going to ask you the broad question. You have had a couple months to think back now on the election, what's happened, what happened before, what's happened since. What are your thoughts on how the election was conducted here in Pennsylvania?
Well, we know that our counties always take their responsibility for administering, as Commissioner Boozle just said, administering the election in a fair, secure, and accurate manner. And last year, when we saw the perfect storm of challenges kind of come together, we saw the implementation of mail-in ballots for the first time ever. Now, granted, they were the same as the absentee ballots we had before, but now with everybody being eligible, of course, it was new for lots of folks who had to learn the process and how to engage in them. You had a global pandemic, which made them even more popular, those mail-in ballots even more popular than we thought they were going to be, on top of trying to deliver an in-person election in a safe and manner that with public health interests in mind. And I think despite all of that, as Commissioner Boozle just said, our county's delivered an incredibly successful election. But at the same time, you know, with that first year of implementing mail-in ballots, we certainly learned a lot from that experience. We learned where there may be some gray areas in the law that could be tightened up and clarified. We learned where there are things that we can do better. For instance, one of the things that our organization is calling for as a priority, again, is to expand the period for pre-canvassing. So that's that preparation of those mail-in ballots so that we can start that before Election Day. With only getting to start in November at 8 a.m. on Election Day, we had to process tens of thousands of ballots on top of doing in-person election. And we warned that that probably meant we weren't going to have timely results on election night, which was probably going to cause confusion for voters as we kept counting throughout the week. And unfortunately, everything that we predicted came true. So we're renewing that call for pre-canvassing to help to alleviate that so we can have those results and help to alleviate that confusion. And then as well, also looking to move that application deadline back for the mail-in ballots. As Commissioner Boozle just noted, that timing on the mail really was one of the most significant concerns. And we learned very quickly that if someone waited till the last minute, till that 7 days that they currently have to apply for a ballot, there really wasn't enough time, even if everything went perfectly, for the application to get processed, to get back to the voter, and then get back to the county with any assurance. So that we think that 15-day period would better serve our voters in making sure that their votes can get back and forth and counted.
You know, what you're talking about, I mean, you were asking for this. The counties were asking for this even before the election, because what you predicted, as you said, Lisa Schaefer, what you predicted would happen actually, you know, came true to a T. I mean, it was not a very going out on a limb and making that prediction, because I think a lot of people saw that. But in this political atmosphere, you need the General Assembly to make a change here, make changes here. In this political atmosphere, are you optimistic that you can get the legislature to move on these things?
I think everyone in, you know, at the county level and the General Assembly, the administration, we all have an interest in making sure that our elections are run fairly, smoothly, securely. And so, you know, there are already a lot of efforts that are underway in both the House and the Senate to examine the past elections and what we can learn. The Election Law Advisory Board convenes its first meeting this week, which is a group of stakeholders who are involved in elections soon come together. You know, we faced challenging issues legislatively before, and we've managed to work through them and come to solutions. So, you know, it's going to take some hard work, certainly, and some ability to put aside some of what's happened in the past. But I do believe that it can happen. And we need the General Assembly, the administration, to sit with us and work those things out.
Yeah, quite frankly, there are more investigations of Pennsylvania's election going on than there have been of the Kennedy assassination. Commissioner Boozle, I'm exaggerating, obviously, but Commissioner Boozle, if you were to testify in front of one of the numerous hearings that are scheduled or are going to happen, I mean, I know you would be reiterating what Lisa Schaefer just said, but what would you tell the General Assembly or these committees that are investigating or looking into these election or the election?
Well, I'd tell them that they should be looking for those gray areas and giving clarification. I think that anytime you have an unexplained or undefined role, whether, let's just use the example, naked ballot, if a naked ballot comes in, does that count or does it not count? Voter intent, where does it go? And anytime you fail to legislate something, it will turn into litigation, which means you're going to turn over your role as a legislator, a General Assembly, over to the court, and the court's going to make a decision. And so whatever the decision, that's what part of this, the frustration was for us, is that the litigation was happening during the election. And so there were things that were coming to us last minute. We weren't sure if we could count the ballots after the 3-day period passed. There were so many things that they were relying on the courts for. So I would tell them, do your due diligence, run your committees or you run your hearings. But don't just point at the problem. I would tell them that they need to come up with solutions. We're willing to meet you and work with you on those solutions and give you advice on what we saw as the administrator. Mind you, none of the folks that are holding those hearings administered the election. They only made decisions about how it would be there. So unless you understand the full intricacies, and it is a very intricate process, look, there's 67 counties. I bet you every commissioner now has an opinion about the elections and how they should be run. And they may not always be the same, but it's still our job to administer it the way the rules were set up. And if there's rules that aren't clear, that's when you're going to run into problems. So clear them up. That's all we're asking.
Let's take a phone call from Patrick in Mount Joy. Patrick, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello, Scott.
Hi.
It's my understanding that only 14 of the counties used the software from Dominion. And the Dominion, of course, is the company that they said flipped votes or something, for Biden instead of Trump. But yet in those 14, they all, Trump won in those 14. But my question for the panel is that accurate? That's what I've read, but their comments.
All right. Thank you very much for your call, Patrick. First of all, is the number 14, Lisa, I'll ask you this, is the number 14 of counties in Pennsylvania use Dominion? And if I recall, it was all but one of those counties that do have Dominion machines that former President Trump won those counties. Lisa or Commissioner Boozle, whichever one wants to take that question.
Well, what I can say, I don't have the numbers right in front of me to be able to confirm exactly, but 14 sounds about right, if I recollect, and I don't have the election results in front of me to confirm. But what I can say is that all of our counties got new voting equipment within the last 2 years under a directive that came out of a court litigation. So all of our counties had new voting equipment. All of it was certified by both the federal government and the state government. So all of those machines were certified. All counties went through their 2% audit afterward to verify those results and make sure that everything happened accurately and there were no discrepancies. So we have faith that all of our machines, all of our software operated as expected. We went through all of the chain of command, all of the logic testing beforehand, and as I said, all of the audits afterwards. So we have confidence that regardless of the machines that a county used, that those results those machines work properly and the results can be counted on.
Yeah, and let me just add to that, because we try to state fact here, is that that theory that was espoused by former President Trump and some of his lawyers about Dominion voting machines has been debunked. I mean, that was one that went on a conspiracy theory that somehow the late leader of Venezuela had some input into flipping votes in Dominion used machines, and that has been debunked. And Dominion has sued a number of conservative media outlets, and those conservative media outlets, including Fox News, Max, have put disclaimers on the air saying that what they reported was not true. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest during this portion of the program, Lisa Schaefer, Executive Director of the County Commissioners Association of Pennsylvania, and Butler County Commissioner Kevin Boozle. He's the President of the County Commissioners Association of Pennsylvania. We're talking about the commissioners' legislative priorities right now. We've been talking about changes in elections, the rules and the regulations, things that can be done to make it the future elections run smoother. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalk@witf. Let's take a phone call from Robert in Fayetteville. Robert, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning, Scott. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
My concern revolves around John Joyce, who is our representative in District 13 here, and my many Republican friends and neighbors who are who work the polls. I sent him a letter after he signed on to that ridiculous Texas thing, and the fact that our voters, our citizens here, have been undermined repeatedly by the Trump administration, and I can't think of one way. We have to strengthen them, and the way to do it is to disapprove of what was done. And I've asked John Joyce in a letter, and I've spoken by phone to both his Chambersburg and his D.C. office to say, what is he doing? And in his last three newsletters, he refused to even repudiate the fact. And on January 6th, I stayed up until the wee hours of the morning to see him to give his explanation, which was ridiculous. And I think it's very, very important that you, with your program, and I'm very happy to hear the county commissioners, because that's where our volunteers, I mean, we've got several neighbors who volunteer here in Franklin County at the polls, and all of our voters have to believe in it. And yet, while Mastriano has taken that busload of people down to the rally, he lives not far from me, and Joyce, in his latest newsletter, has never approved of the election of Biden. I mean, you don't have to approve of Biden, but you certainly have to say that the thing worked. And it is very, very upsetting to me that John Joyce has not done that.
Robert, thank you very much for your call. And this kind of goes back, and Commissioner Buzo, I ask you this question. This goes back, Robert's call goes back to that question I asked about being disrespected. Do you feel that you have the confidence of our elected officials if they are questioning the results of the election, or that the elections were run properly?
I'm certainly okay with the questioning and being able to stand up to those audits. It gives trust back into an election that's been questioned for no reasons, but I think that people questioned it for their own gains. And so, but we stood through those many lawsuits or litigations that came out of that. I feel very confident that we can stand with the legislature and let them know that we ran a confident, secure, safe, fair election. I think that it's been our goal the entire time to keep them informed. In our county, one of the things we're doing to restore that trust is we formed a commission to review our own process. And I think we are going to come up with better processes internal of we have about a 13-person commission going to run from beginning to end. And we have a third party writing the report, so it's not deemed slanted in any either direction, party affiliation or otherwise. So sometimes we're working very hard to regain and improve ourselves, but it needs to happen because of the damage and the questions and the way they were asked and the uncertainty that was placed in people's minds about our election.
You know, the damage that you're talking about, Lisa Schaefer, we heard stories, I don't know about Pennsylvania, but Georgia in particular and some other states, that election workers were even threatened. Their safety was threatened. Did that happen here in Pennsylvania?
Absolutely. We definitely heard stories from across the state, from our election directors and others, that they, you know, everything from pure threats to just simply picking up the phone and getting yelled at by voters because, you know, they were being fed misinformation or didn't understand processes and thought that the election directors in our counties were at fault for those things. Our counties and our election offices have been through a lot over the last year.
I can't believe we've come to this point. So I just, blown off some steam there with that. Lisa, when we normally have you on the program at the beginning of the year, because the County Commissioners Association of Pennsylvania puts out your legislative priorities. Obviously, the election is one of those main priorities this year. What about other priorities? What are some other things that you're looking at for counties from the legislature?
Sure. So this year, our counties chose five priorities in total. So we've already talked about our top priority in election reforms. But in addition to that, our other priorities include broadband expansion. So not just focusing on rural broadband, but broadband expansion as a whole, continuing to look for solutions to the EMS crisis that's facing Pennsylvania. And then two priorities that are closely tied together, one to maintain funding for our critical county human services programs, and the other to expand funding for mental health services in particular.
Those last two I'm particularly interested in because the pandemic has had a great impact on mental health and the human services that counties, again, are charged with administering. What are you looking for in particular when it comes to mental health and human services?
So when we talk about human services, just to be clear, we're talking about those programs that counties deliver on behalf of the state to some of our most vulnerable citizens. So you're talking about doing child abuse investigations. You're talking about those fighting substance abuse addictions, individuals with mental illness, developmental disabilities, those in long-term care. And again, we provide those in partnership with the state, but every year, it seems lately, we've been really struggling and find ourselves advocating just to prevent state funding from being cut, much less achieving the gains that we need as caseloads continue to increase, as cases become more complex. And certainly, I think the pandemic really showed us where the safety net is really becoming more and more strained. You know, one of the ironies is that in times like this, it's really those human services programs that are the last, source of support for a lot of folks. So when we've seen so much, particularly in mental health, how much the strain has worn on everyone across the Commonwealth. So those mental health services, we'd been talking about as a priority, increasing funding to support those programs and the increased need that's there for many years. But the pandemic, like so many other things, really shone a light on the need. And so we really need to continue to work. We understand the state is going to have its budget challenges, the same as we are at the local level, but these are truly critical human needs that are happening in our communities.
Commissioner Boozle, many times when we've had this discussion, not just you and I, but with county commissioners, your hands are tied. The state, your funding comes from the state, mandates come from the state. Do you think that the General Assembly understands the issues, the challenges the counties are facing, especially now?
I don't think they understand firsthand. They only understand what we're able to show them. And numbers don't resonate as well as people. When you tell a legislator the issue, but you put it to a face to that issue. For example, opioid abuse is up again. Opioid death is more frequent than last year. However, those issues have really dropped off the hot button radars, right, because of the pandemic and the election. And when you start with the pandemic, and at first you deny it's happening, and then you ignore that it's happening, then you politicize it, and then you turn that into an election, it really gets very hard to get in front of people with these primary issues that we see as county commissioners. And, our healthcare workers, our caseworkers, that never got easier. It got worse because now I can't go see these folks. They can't come in for services. They can't go in for their medications or what have you. It's compounded the issue to a point of breaking. And if they don't understand that and they decide to change or remove funding or change the process by which that funding is delivered to a county, or tie our hands with the funding that is given to us, where we don't have flexibility, the only folks that are harmed by that are the people that are being delivered the services. The counties know their counties. My county is different than Pike County or Schuylkill County or anyone else. we have to have that ability to move those funds where we need them, not where the state or the legislator has legislated them.
I want to thank our guests for being with us today. Lisa Schaefer is Executive Director of the County Commissioners Association of Pennsylvania. Kevin Boozle is a Butler County Commissioner, and he's the President of the County Commissioners Association of Pennsylvania. Thank you for being with us today.
Thanks for having us.
I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a good day.